Welcome to Booktopia On. My name is Bronwyn.
I'm Ben.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
So we're going to talk about Best of 2017, which is something we've been talking about a lot on the blog in the last few weeks, over the new year if you haven't seen it. So it's our choices of what we thought really, really stuck with us from last year. So we're going to start with picture books. Who's read of these?
Like, can we start with I Just Ate My Friend?
My John favorite. Loves.
I absolutely adore this book.
It was. Is it still on your desk, or is it? It was on there for a long time.
The bum book's now on my desk.
The bum book.
Sorry.
Yeah. Another winner.
Yeah. So should we name the ones who are in here? So we've got the bum book, When I Grow Up, Zoom, We Are Here.
Here we are.
My dyslexia comes to play. I can't even read the other one.
And Hortense and the Shadow,
and I Just Ate My Friend.
And of course,
Hortense and the Shadow is gorgeous.
But then you forgot the winner of picture books, which was Arab Baby.
Pig the Star. Yeah.
Because of course, Pig wins our hearts every time.
There are two very worthy, actually three very worthy books, and then standing out there is I Ate My Friend and the Bum Book and Pig the Star on the other end of the scale. So the worthy ones are Here We Are and Hortense the Shadow and When I Grow Up.
I think we're going to change the word worthy and say one are very comical, one are very whimsical.
But then things like Here We Are are really
but there's
beautiful.
Learnings and stuff in it.
I'm sure that Pig has plenty to teach kids.
There's tons to learn about from
Bum
Book.
There's a lot of morals
well.
In Pig.
Some are going to make you laugh and some are going to capture your imagination. And
picture books is something really tricky to rate. And I think a lot of people will agree with this. You know, it's very easy to flip through a picture book and say, oh, that's fantastic. But you know, sometimes there are picture books that we in the office just think are incredible, and then I've taken these things home and I've shown them to the kids, and they just switch off, and it's just not for them. Picture books have to have an incredible amount of X factor to make this kind of list, but they also have to communicate, and they also have to introduce ideas and language to children. You know, there's all this stuff that people think, oh, picture book is easy. But it's so much heavy lifting that goes into making 13 pages of brilliance.
You've got a very discerning audience.
Yeah, and if they don't like it, they'll tell you.
Yeah,
they will.
There's a reason Aaron Blabey's won this one again. He has not stopped with the good stuff. He continues to deliver with the Pig books. And Pig the Star, in particular, is a laugh-out loud. It's just outrageous.
His expression on the cover is so good.
I always love his expressions. Remember the Christmas one? He's like, see, that podcast listeners can't see, but
it's very much like, this is my really Christmas good ball. Impression, everyone, and I think we'll take a photo of it after the podcast.
No, you won't.
Aaron Blabey and capturing expressions is just, he's uncannily able to really capture hilarious expressions that just say so much.
Mm. So should we move up to our children's fiction?
Okay, we're done with picture books. Here comes children's fiction.
Our winner was Nevermore by Jessica Townsend.
The Trials of Morrigan Crow, a magical, wonderful book.
I remember hearing about it when Jessica got her bidding war happening with this book. I remember Tracy telling us about it, and we were like, what is this book?
And now it's here.
And now it's here, and it is magical.
And selling like hotcakes.
It has done so well. And I remember at the launch that we went to, and some of the staff had brought their kids, and obviously the kids had read it, and the way they were looking at Jessica was like, you have brought us this world. I am going to listen to everything you are saying. It was really, really nice to see.
Yeah, like you often hear in the bookselling world comparisons to J.K. Rowling, and it's not always the case. Like, it's just something that gets
said a lot.
It's a
nice comparison to make.
It is a nice comparison to make, and it's a comparison that gets made often. And this is one of the times when it really does feel like this could be as big.
Well, the sales have just kept coming. It has just grown and risen up the bestseller list, and that's a good sign that
it's
getting word of mouth.
And it's all come from this mystery person, this young girl who lives on the, she comes from the Sunshine Coast, isn't it?
Just burst onto the scene.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And it's beat out a very competitive shortlist. We have Matt Stanton with Funny Kid, Shoma Califf, Tales in the Tall Forest, Sally Rippon's the start of her new series, Polly and Bustle, is a fantastic book, The Wayward Witch and the Feelings Monster, Jacqueline Moriarty's Extremely Inconvenient Adventures of Bronte Middleston.
It's amazing, that book.
So beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Blabey again with his junior fiction, or his children's fiction series, Aliens vs. Bad Guys. It's into its sixth episode. And of course, Andy Griffiths and Terry Denton. It's quite an upset that Andy and Terry haven't won this one. But that just goes to show just how special Nevermore is.
Yeah.
Well, the wonderful thing about this is... you see this list is not only is there great writing going on, but there's great book publishing going on as well, because some of these books are divine.
Jacqueline Moriarty and Sally Rippon
are just gorgeous things. Yeah. They are divine. They are so, and any kid would just love to own these. I mean, and they've got sparkly bits on the front.
They do.
The illustrations are so good.
They're gold embossed.
Shame. Yeah. I mean, we know that Bad Guys and Andy and they do great illustrations, and that's one of the ways they've been able to engage kids in reading. But there's also that side of wanting to give a gift, and some of these books come in these wonderful little hardcovers that are gorgeous and are giftable. But I just want to put a mention in for Funny Kid, because I feel that I feel kind of connected to the book, because in Funny Kid the bad kid, or
anti-hero
is named Purcell, which I feel very close to, and I think that some of the attributes of the character
I identify
with them strongly, and I thank Matt for the for dragging the Purcell name out of obscurity and putting it into such an incredible series.
I think it's pretty amazing. We've gone through kids' books and like middle grade books, and it's pretty fairly well overwhelmingly Australian. Like,
oh yeah,
which is so great.
That's the amazing thing about the Australian book industry right now, is just so much stuff just being written and illustrated and published by Australian creative people. It's just wonderful.
Should we go up to YA?
Yeah. Sarah, you're our sort of expert on this.
Okay,
we defer to you.
In our number one winner of this category, we have La Belle Sauvage, book one of The Book of Dust by Philip Pullman, which, to my shame, I have not read yet. But I'm really excited to read. It's a beloved series. You know, sometimes when you just have that delayed gratification thing, when you're like, I know. I'm going to love you when I get to you, and then you'll be over. And so I'm just going to set you aside for a little while. I've kind of had that going.
Also, when an author of such enormousness sort of comes out of the shadows and produces something brand new.
After so long, I
had the same thing with the second Harper Lee book when that finally came. I couldn't
delay,
read it that
delay,
year.
Delay.
I
was
like, stay away from this thing.
It's going to be so good when you get to it, but I just can't do it. I just can't do it right now. But it has sold amazingly. The reviews have been amazing. He's just such an amazing author. I keep using the word amazing.
Because he's amazing.
It's really the best word for it.
It's amazing, everyone.
And then we have this like killer list of amazing books. So
amazing.
I'm going to say first Strange the Dreamer by Lainey Taylor, because that blew me away. I mean, it feels like so long ago now.
It was
earlier in 2017, like around April, but
I am
so keen for the next book in this duology. It's gorgeous.
That cliffhanger.
It's.
I want the next book now.
Definitely ends at a point where you really do not want it to end, which which is hard, but you know. But it's just, Lainey Taylor is a total magician. She writes the most spellbounding, beautiful books, and I adore it. That was a great one. The real standout for me in the last year. We have the Lovers YA anthology Begin and Begin, which pretty much gets all, like, just some of the most awesome Australian authors in the YA space at the moment and puts them all together in one book, which was just a delight to read. There's a story in there from Amy Kaufman, which is amazing. There's a story in there from Jacqueline Moriarty, which is amazing. There's one there from Ellie Marnie, which who I love, which is a prequel to her whole Every series, which was amazing. It was just like bam, bam, bam. Such a great collection. Everyone, there's not a bad one in there. Like, it's just a total winner collection.
Something
of
I haven't read yet, and I should.
Oh, God, you'll love it. It's so good. And then we have The Hate U Give, which is really powerful, really engrossing novel that sort of touches on race issues and, like, the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm.
It's really... that one is amazing, and it's also going to be a movie soon, which I look forward to. We had John Green with Turtles All the Way Down. John Green can do no wrong. Renegades by Marissa Meyer, super fun adventure story about superheroes. Like, I love superheroes. This one was loads of fun. They have, like, really kind of inventive, creative superpowers, kind of like the Zero series. And Unearthed by Amy Kaufman and Megan Spooner, another big standout for me last year. So fun. Came out towards the end of the year. I absolutely loved it. Everyone loved it. Everyone's talking about how cruel they are to leave us hanging on
another cruel cliffhanger.
But, you know, I like the cruel authors.
Well, they know how to make you come crawling back.
Yeah, and that was our YA shortlist. Amazing books.
Oh, yeah. I'll just say now, if we're racing through this and you're thinking, what was that book they just said? Or where can I go buy this thing? Obviously, I want to go read this. Or have I read this? It sounds similar to something I've heard of, but I want to go and check. Go to the Booktopian blog. It's all there in one huge definitive list for you to see the books, buy the books, read the books, review the books, other books.
It's called Best of 2017, the definitive list.
The next category moving along. Is something that's quite close to my heart. We call this the list for trailblazing nonfiction. Nonfiction books that sort of broke out of genrefication and sort of shook things up in the public mind and in the media and made changes and are terrific works of writing in and of themselves. In the shortlist, we have Birdmania, Talking to My Daughter About the Economy, A Brief History of Capitalism, Call of the Reed Warbler, Ta-Nehisi Coates's We Were 8 Years in Power, Utopia for Realists and How We Can Get There, and The Secret Lives of Cows.
That sounds awesome.
Sorry, The Secret Life of Cows. It's a very bizarre list, and there is some gold in there, some books that have come from obscure publishers and from left of field, and books in translation that have just... totally caught the public mind and exploded people's imaginations. And the winner, we could not go past Roxane Gay, Hunger,
yeah,
A Memoir of My Body. A book that has just really rattled people. I mean, she was actually meant to publish this with Simon Schuster in the States, and she withdrew the contract from them in protest of the Miley Nopolis thing. She did so much with this, and then it just became a huge bestseller through Hachette, who published it here. And there's a fantastic review on our blog. You can go back and read, but you really need to read this book. It's a book that will, really change your way of thinking on a lot of things.
What a great category!
Yeah, I read Talking to My Daughter About the Economy because. Me and numbers and the economy and finance and the rest of it, we don't get on. and I needed to have someone just tell me about it really simply, and he does. But he gives the economy, he gives the idea of the economy, he gives the idea of politics in the economy. He smacks it around, he slaps it up. It's really clever, insightful, simple, which is what I need. Because he is writing to his daughter. He wrote a book to his daughter, and then it took off. He was the finance minister for Greece.
A very short time.
Yeah, but it was a bit of a terrible time to be finance minister of Greece. And he is a very, very clear thinker, and it was an extraordinary book. And The Secret Life of Cows.
I love that book.
Which just sounds great. I really want
to read it. It was actually plucked from, I think it was the 1980s it came out. And it was there was a reference to it somewhere, and then it just blew up in England. And now it's just, you know, sort of cross borders, and it's become an international sensation.
So it was originally published in the 80s.
Yeah, it's it's an older book that's come into a whole new life with the new introduction. it's about this sort of quite mad family who did the whole organic sort of farm to table thing decades before that was a thing, just out of the the pure interest in the topic. And they sort of met these cows as individuals and realized the kind of incredible things they could do and how they behave. And you read these bizarre anecdotes of cows getting into mischief and being observant and some cows being real villains and some cows being real heroes.
I really love cows.
And it's all true. It's very entertaining and very intriguing. I definitely recommend that one.
Sold. Let's move on up to.
Food and drink. Maggie Beer
presides over this category.
Presides over this category.
Yes.
She really won Christmas, Maggie, with a fantastic voice. It's a beautifully designed and has a real strong sort of call to arms. She's teamed up with a Professor Ralph Martins to look at the foods we eat and see if. And which should really expose a new science an existing science, in that Alzheimer's and other diseases of age are often precipitated by lifestyle. And if you can change the foods you eat, you can
avoid them.
Live a much better life, mm-hmm. Which is fantastic. And people have really jumped on board with that. And there are some delicious recipes in this book, so it's a win-win-win.
And we had some of the biggest names in food and drink publishing. Return, Matt Moran and Jamie Oliver and Donna Hay, Delicious Daily, and the Burke Street Bakery.
Oh,
and also Yotam Orlingi with Sweet. It was a big year for big brand name cooks, but they are divine. Like,
yeah, they really delivered.
Yeah. Five Ingredients returns to Jamie Oliver's
simplicity.
Yeah, and it's really taken off. That TV show is great this year round, and he just brings it back to something that's easy to do and fast, and solves a problem for us, which is
it's what he does best.
He just solves that dinner problem,
because the worst question. Superfoods, and we were like, okay, Jamie. But.
Yeah, and also he did a whole range of weird things, but he's come back, and that question, what's for dinner. It's made easier when he's around doing this sort of thing.
Mm.
John, do you want to take us into history?
Yeah, I love history. this year has been a great year for history, and there's been so much variety in what's been available. One of the ones that stands out for me, because it doesn't really do history as straight history, it doesn't really do travel as straight travel, it doesn't really do memoir as straight memoir. I don't know what the hell it is. It's a literary
non-fiction.
Critique as well, and it's got all these different things going
literary,
on.
Literary, travel, memoir, slash,
history book.
Yeah, Sagaland.
Richard Feidler and Carrie Gislason.
It's great. It's wonderful. And it sort of takes on from the way that Richard Feidler did his book on... the history of Constantinople, Ghost
Empire.
Because that, again, had me in trouble trying to work out where to put it on the shelf. You know, is it a history, is it travel, what is it? Tell me, Richard, what is it? Sagaland's, in a sense, that kind of thing. But they're just so entertaining. Like, you learn so much. It's like a little tiny bit of... If you were to randomly Google Iceland, you couldn't get as wicked a mix as the stuff that's in this book. you've got the meeting of the Russians and the US in a haunted house.
Yes.
As one part of the story, you've got the weird chess guy losing his mind and coming to live in.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got Nordic creation myths.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know that friend you have who goes traveling and comes back with the most interesting, most creative stories that you've never heard before and knows everything about the history in the country? That's this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a quick sneaky mention for Escape from Berlin by Peter Nash. Peter Nash just happens to be Tony Nash's dad. And, Tony Nash is the guy who started Booktopia. But that said, and you know, there is that father-son love there, and there's
acknowledging the connection.
Not acknowledging the connection. Peter Fitzsimons has written the introduction to this book because it's a memoir of Peter's life, because he was sent out from Europe under the Holocaust and the running from the Holocaust, and ended up in Shanghai and then ended up in Australia. So it's quite a long the story, Escape from Berlin. But there's also the Van Diemenian War, which is such an important subject and needs to be told. And this fellow is telling it in a way which really hasn't been told before. And I'm surprised there wasn't more noise about this, because there's been such reaction in certain areas of Australia against the truth being told about the what is the genocide in Tasmania. And this book really hits it.
And then on the other side of the Australian thing, you've got Louis Naura, an icon of Australian writing, who's done this, he calls it a biography of Woolloomooloo. I don't know if you can do a biography of a town, you can do a history of a town. He's called a biography. It is just full of character and contrast in this tiny inner city suburb, which he spends a lot of his life now. It's fascinating reading and really well put together.
And at the top, the winner is Peter Fitzsimons' Burke and Wills. We all think we know Burke and Wills, the story. They, you know, they wander out in the desert and they die.
I will freely admit I knew very little about it
at all.
You
knew the names, though.
I knew the names, and I vaguely knew that they weren't, that things didn't go great. But that's about all I knew. So thank you, Peter Fitzsimons, for teaching me more.
Because that whole thing it can be really, really funny, because it's just so stupidly done. I mean, he describes them leaving a dining table fully set on a hill because they couldn't be bothered carrying it anymore. And they set it up, and it looked like if you came across the hill and you didn't know they'd been passed, you'd just find a beautiful 19th century dining table.
You'd be like, is this an art piece? Yeah, I don't know.
Out in the middle of nowhere. Because the stuff they took was ridiculous. They did not go to Kathmandu or any of those places to get any of the stuff that you meant to take when you go hiking. They took camels, they took dining sets, they took...
Actually, I'm sorry, camels are very good for hiking.
Is it?
We took camels on my trek. Camels are extremely strong.
No, okay, the camels...
Did the camels make it?
They would carry the table.
The camels loaded with tables.
I think some of the camels might have ended up on the dinner table on some stage.
Yeah, maybe.
Awesome.
But they just took all these things that just weren't necessary for a trip like that. And these guys hadn't done it before, and they didn't listen to the indigenous people who were there going, don't do this. And then, as Peter said in the podcast early in the year, he said... He goes, it's like these guys died in aisle 6 of Woolies.
Yeah. That's my favourite analogy I think I've ever heard.
Because these guys weren't alone. They were talking to the Aboriginal people who were in their area, and they rejected all their help. I mean,
and there's food and water everywhere, and they just didn't know where to find it.
They died of hunger. Like, it's just, are you insane? So it's a brilliant read, and I think that a lot of Australians really need to sort of get into it and hear just how mad our own history is.
The triumph and the tragedy.
Yeah. Are we moving to the...
I'll take us through biography.
Interesting.
Real quick, because we've got to get into fiction.
I know still. We've got still so much to go.
You can't, you can't go through this real quick.
This is a great category. There's
some huge stuff in here. Notable authors and titles from the shortlist: Tim Rogers, Detours, Rosie Waterland, Every Lie I've Ever Told, Caroline Baum, a Booktopia alumni, only, singular memoir. Nelson Mandela, Dare Not Linger, his posthumously done memoir. The Trauma Cleaner, a mind-blowing read. And Wednesdays with Bob by Bob Hawke and Derek Riley.
What a killer lineup.
Yeah.
This is Bob.
And winning the whole crop, we definitely could not go past the really the best-selling Australian non-fiction title and the biggest icon of Christmas and beyond, Jimmy Barnes, Working Class Man.
The thing about Jimmy Barnes, Working Class Man, is the honesty that he had in Working Class Boy just gets shuffled across into this side. And if ever you wanted to know what it was like behind the scenes of setting up something like Cold Chisel or touring Australia, what it was like in the 70s and the 80s, in those bars, working class bars, doing this sort of stuff. But on the other side, he flips over when he becomes more successful, how it is he holds it all together. Having read Working Class Boy, you can understand his behaviour better in Working Class Men. If there had been no Working Class Boy, we'd all be going, what the hell are you doing, Jimmy? Why are you behaving this way? But Working Class Boy gives you the background to the madness that's in Working Class Man. It is a killer rock bio. Like, it is just, there are very few people, and I got corrected on Facebook, very few people apart from Rolling Stones lead guitarist, what's his?
Keith Richards,
the man who cannot be killed, who have lived harder than Jimmy. But I think Jimmy's close. I think Keith's been living pretty calmly for the last 30 years or so. Jimmy did not stop. Jimmy, the book opens with only a few years ago that Jimmy really just went, stop, I have to stop or I'll be dead. And so he cut all the drugs and alcohol, all the partying, most of it.
And
it pulled up on the edge of the cliff before he fell over. And that's only a couple of years ago. So the book opens on this terrifying night that Jimmy and his wife experienced, and then pedals back a bit and brings you up to that night. So wow. It's an extraordinary book.
Mm.
Let's move on to romance.
Oh, who's going to talk about this category? Oh.
Well, I'm going to talk about Graham Cincy and Pierce, because we snuck it into romance because it is a bigger book than just the romance element. As I was told by Graham when I tried to talk to him about that, he's like, no, there's more than that. And I know there's more than that because I read the damn thing. They take the pilgrimage, and it's a story of two different people who start walking the Camino path. Separately for different reasons, and pretty much separate along a lot of the way, and you go step by step with their experience of this walk and what it does to them, what it means to them, how they approach it, how separate they are, and the way in which Graham and Anne wrote it was that they each was writing, Graham was writing the man and Anne was writing the woman, and you can see that separate, that difference in there, but they also edited together and they worked together on this thing. It is a brilliant piece of work, and you'll fall in love with France and Spain. Scenery and the history that's involved in this, because Graham and have done this. They've walked everywhere.
That trip multiple times.
Yeah, they have walked so many different places, and they've walked across England, across France. They're nutty walkers, and so they have that experience behind them when they did this. But there are other characters that come into it, the people they met on the way. It's a really gorgeous book. It really deserves to be put in everyone's bag when they're going on holidays.
And that caps off a short list of some huge names in romance writing as well.
We're not going strictly romance because I don't want to get into argument about
the romance element.
Yeah, there's at least an element there.
To it, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah,
and also, there's nothing wrong with romance.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong.
However, it is a very broad list that covers a lot of
people. Yeah, and a lot of people don't like for us to use romance as a genre name.
They're not all bodice rippers.
No.
But we do have Helen Hart in there. And every time this woman writes a book, we can't get stuck in fast enough. It flies off the shelves. Yeah,
I just wonder if any other booksellers are doing the numbers that we're doing, because we are killing it with this book. I mean, it's insane that other bookshops aren't putting it all over the front window, just like the 50 Shades when it first came out.
Yeah, people are loving it.
I was looking at Helen Hart's website. She sells her special like Steel Brothers merch as well, with like craving mugs and tote bags.
We've also got that's amazing. We've also got Beautiful Messy Love by Tess Woods, which this book is awesome. Like, and it's got a lot of comparisons to Looking for Ella Brandy, except for like older readers. So it's a bit of a star-cross-cultural romance with lots of heartbreak and loving moments. And we've got Fiona McIntosh in there with a sweeping historical epic in the Tea Gardens.
Got a Flo McDonald.
Flo McDonald with...
Suddenly One Summer.
Fleur's a Booktopia favourite. We've been selling Fleur since book one, and it is just her...
Is it the rural romance / romantic suspense?
Well, that's where she's on this one, but she also does now the more women's contemporary fiction line as well. And she, last time I spoke to her, she was tempting. She loves Michael Connelly, loves him, like loves every book he's ever written, and she wants to do her own detective novels and mystery novels.
Maybe they should pair up.
Yeah.
Well, at last year's romance convention, it was the Fleur McDonald books that went first.
Yeah.
So they all got grabbed really quickly. And we've got a Marion Keyes in there.
Yeah, that seems a strange fit, but just jam that in there. But it's...
She's for that relationship.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. It was just not... But she's just she's got the darkness there, she's got the humour. They're such intelligent books, those ones. Mm.
Pushing on into speculative fiction, our fantasy and sci-fi titles, we have, again, some huge names. We have Brandon Sanderson, we have Neil Gaiman, we have Terry Brooks, we have Stephen King and Owen King, we have Jay Kristoff, we have Kim Stanley Robinson. this is an all-star list, and it's been capped out by what must be the biggest sort of follow-up book in the genre.
Highly anticipated.
In a long, long time. Highly anticipated. Andy Weir, the author of The Martian, his sophomore book, to use the American phrase, Artemis.
And this is, whereas The Martian was kind of like a one-man survival story, this is more of a heist story in space. Mm. And I love a good heist.
Who doesn't?
I'm always up for a heist.
We are running out of time.
So I just want to say, Jay Kristoff, God's great. So awesome.
Hell yeah.
so good. A series that I love. Do we have to move on already?
I'm just looking at the list going, holy crap, there's so many things.
Yeah, well, we're onto historical fiction. Oh my God. And a few of us have read the winner of historical fiction, which is Chris Womersley's City of Crows, which was such an interesting story. Just not what I was really expecting, but I loved it, and it was really entertaining, and everyone in the office who's read it has really enjoyed it. So no wonder it's our winner.
And then
Manhattan Beach.
Manhattan Beach is a personal favourite of mine. We've got Philippa Gregory in that list. We've got Ken Follett in that list. We've got Brendan Cornwell in that list. We've got Robert Harris in that list.
Ken Follett, Column of Fire is such a great read.
You've got your review on the blog as well, haven't you?
I did give it a glowing review. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that book. I did not want it to end. I was very happy living there. It was great. And then also the Manette Walters, The Last Hours, is sort of a different kind of a book for her. Unless I haven't read it, I don't think she's written one of these historical fiction books before. And it was great. I really liked that one. And Philippa Gregory is always good. The Last Tudor is about, I'm going to forget her name, but it's like the youngest of the three sisters that... one of which was Jane Grey. Am I right about that?
You
have to read the book to find out.
My brain's gone.
I think I'm right.
Let's talk about some crime books.
Has anything happened in crime this year?
Loads has happened in crime this year.
We defer to our crime expert.
Spot, yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh, so much to say. I don't actually know where to begin. So, should I begin with the winner?
Yeah,
let's go. All right.
So, obviously, the winner is Jane Harper with Force of Nature. This is the follow-up to The Dry, which is a huge, huge, big, huge deal in 2016. This has been a huge, huge, big, big deal in 2017. It's the continuation of Aaron Falk, who is the...
I love Aaron.
Look, he's great. He's great again here. This is one of those series where it's like you read the first book and you just can't imagine, like, how will she do that again or do, you know... You just can't imagine what it's going to be. And she has delivered something that is just as amazing and enthralling, just as awesome, maybe even slightly better, but totally different. Like, just really, really different setting, really different feel, different atmosphere. But
and once again, awesomely. It just grabs you from the first page.
Oh, totally. She's a wizard. I don't know how she does it. It's amazing.
What's amazing is that the dryers kept selling in the same levels it was selling last year and it's selling this year.
Yeah.
Like, so this book, she's got two books in the top in the bestseller list this year.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing.
She's just phenomenal. Now, we also have a phenomenal list. So Sarah Bailey's The Dark Lake, that was a standout for me this year. Another Australian author, another series. This is the first book in the series. I'm really looking forward to the next one. Loved it. Dark, small town, sort of similar to The Dry. Like, I would recommend it to someone who enjoyed The Dry, but it's different as well. A female main character who's really compelling. And I could keep talking about this for a while, so I'll just quickly say the next one is See What I Have Done by Sarah Schmidt, which, whoa, this book.
Yeah, like, that describes it perfectly.
Yeah, this book is a creepy, scary, feverish look at Lizzie Borden, the famous axe murderer who killed her parents. It is insanely creepy, so mesmerizing, unlike almost anything that I've read. It was phenomenal. Loved it. Wimmera, another great one, another Australian crime. This one has sold so well, right? Like, it has been amazing.
For
a
debut, it's just been
internationally as well.
And I would like to see this one be a movie. I would really like to see that one be a movie. And speaking of crime books that get turned into movies, we have the next one in the Millennium series, begun by Stieg Larsson, continued by David Lagenkrantz, The Girl Who Takes an Eye for an Eye. I haven't read this yet. However, I hear that it's amazing, and I look forward to reading it. It is a series that I love. The Secrets She Keeps by Michael Robotham. This book was so heart-wrenching. Like... It was, because it's a robo, it was enthralling, difficult to put down, but it was also one that had me sympathising with some characters that I really didn't expect that I would ever find myself sympathising with.
That's one you can't really talk about either.
I can't, no. I mean,
it's one of those ones that's so... The
you
story,
don't want to give away anything. What's really going on, but you will find yourself excusing behaviour that you really never thought you would excuse.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, Crimson Lake...
Candace Fox.
I know. She can do no wrong. I just read the follow-up to this book, so Redemption Point, which Crimson Lake, you know, the setup for this, and I'm going to try not to talk for too long. I know we've got other categories, but the setup for this is that the main character has been accused of a dreadful, horrible crime. His life has just been torn apart. And in that first book, you know, you read the whole thing desperately hoping for him to clear his name and, like, you know, find the truth, and without being too spoilery, you get some of what you want in the follow-up, but there's still plenty of more to keep you reading. She's amazing. She's an amazing storyteller. I just love her. Anything she writes is amazing, and that's fine.
We'll hand over to Ben for the literary.
Oh, mate, all right. Literary fiction. We were blessed in 2017 with some fantastic literary fiction. I think a really tempestuous political climate has perhaps galvanized a lot of people to pick up the pen and really get some stuff down. But we also just had sheer luck in having a lot of greats, particularly Australian greats, all coming out at once with... stupendous work, and it was very competitive.
Very difficult to get a little shortlist like this.
Yes, yeah. Ridiculous. I definitely feel for anyone who was doing a prize list this year. All right, here we are. The shortlist. Ministry of Utmost Happiness, Arundhati Roy. Lincoln in the Bardo, George Saunders. Winter, Ali Smith. A Long Way from Home, Peter Carey. 4321, Paul Auster. The Choke, Sophie Laguna. So those are all prize-winning novels of international repute. And they are all terrific books.
The
winner...
Oh, the winner.
the winner is just utterly stupendous and has taken Australian writing to a whole new level on an international scale. And I look forward to seeing her name on the Man Booker list and everywhere else. Michelle de Kretzer, The Life to Come.
And we've also dubbed that our best book.
Oh, yeah.
Of 2017.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, we
are. I thought we may as well talk about it because we're nearly there. And while Ben's on a roll with how much he loves it.
Look, this book has united everyone in the office who's read it. Usually, I'll love something and John will say, Ben, you really like that? That's so juvenile of you. Hey, you young thing.
That's John's response to most things.
Yeah, but everyone who's read this book has just come in shockwaves, having just been blown apart by the thing. And we've had enormous conversations in the office about it, and it's brought a different response out of all of us. We have all sort of picked on different aspects of this thing, and been united in our war of the thing. It's got this majesty of language.
Whoa.
All the lights just went out, everyone.
All the lights just went
out. It's right, we keep talking.
We can keep going. Majesty.
Yeah, thank goodness the podcast is on.
Now I feel like we're sitting around a campfire.
Battery in it. Yeah, this is
powered by our phones.
Our faces are glowing.
This is extra special. A majesty of language, a very sharp criticism of Australian culture and international culture and the way we live today, what it means to make art. John, what else?
Oh, everything. I mean, from love, from what we think of each other, for integrity. There just so many things where she just has this sharp, sharp view and nails it. Just absolutely nails it. I mean, there are so many times where I just felt like she stepped out of the page and slapped me on the face and just said, stop doing that. And I went, okay. It really is. It's a book that could change. It could change people. It could change people how they think about themselves. Our self-obsessed social media stuff is in there. The way we're casually cruel to others without really knowing it because we're not focused on others. Mm. There's all these things that are in there that are just brilliant, and it deserves multiple readings because you are dealing with a master, and you want to sit there at their feet and get to understand all the stuff that's in that book, although you never will.
Absolutely.
Can we move on to...
Last category.
Yeah, the...
Popular fiction.
Popular fiction, which is where all the big numbers are, because these books have sold and incredibly well over Christmas.
Look at all these names.
But there were so many big, big, big books...
That cross genres as well.
Yeah. That came out. And so this is... We've got everything from Dan Brown's Origin, Rusty Young's Columbiano, Lee Child's Midnight Line, Rachel John's The Greatest Gift, Monica McInerney, A Trip of a Lifetime, and Duty Nun's Sanctuary. And nothing on this list is like the other.
They're also
very different. I mean, Rusty Young, Colombiano is about a child soldier in Colombia in that horrible civil war. A Midnight Line is nothing like Origin. Origin is nothing like Rachel John's Greatest Gift.
It's a case of none of these
Judy
things
Nunn
are like
is,
the other.
Is dealing with refugees. Yeah. And there's just so many different things going on. And the winner is Di Morrissey with The Red Coast. Now, anyone who's been following Di Morrissey's career will know that some of her most favourite books from her fans are the ones that are set in the Kimberley. Tears of the Moon and Kimberley Sun are two books that were out quite a while ago now, and there have been persistent fan mail coming to Di over the years saying, I want more up there, I want more up there. And she finally caved in, when a story hit her, she didn't want to do it without a story that really meant something to her. So when the story hit, she went back to the Kimberley and has delivered another wonderful book. And I really do think that the Kimberley, and Broome in particular, should be giving Di Morrissey some sort of percentage cut on tourism. Definitely. Because she's sending a lot of people up there. I had no interest in going to Broome until I read this book, and now I want to get there.
It does sort of make it seem like a great idea to drop everything and go.
Yeah. The thing is, people who have gone there, it's just so little development. It is really a raw and wild place up in that far northwest coast of Australia. So that's it. We're done.
That was a very long list.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg the stuff that published that year.
It really so is. And there were so many in the list that we could talk about more that we just don't have time to.
Such a strong year in publishing. We had such a good Christmas because there was just so much great Australian publishing and international publishing last year. Massive.
Like, I could talk for easily another 40 minutes just about Sophie Laguna's The Choke, which absolutely devastated me.
I'm not going to let you, Sarah, because
plus I don't know how we're going
to
get out of here.
We've got far too long, and we need to go find the fuse box and see if we can get the power back on. Thank you very much.
Can we do all podcasts in the dark from now on? Yes. I'm kind of really enjoying it.
Well, that was great. Thanks, everyone, and we'll catch you next week at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.